What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
You're listening to the Red Sea Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied! David Ortiz!
And featuring Keaton DeRosier.
It's a grand slam!
Welcome back to the Red Seat Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and joining me for episode 242 of this podcast is none other than my co-host, Keaton DeRosier of Over the Monster and the Dynasty Guru. Keaton, what's going on, man?
Oh, not much. You know, just another recording in another hotel. I think I've set a streak here of consecutive podcasts in different cities. So it'd be nice to do one from my my own apartment next week.
How many have you done on the road now? What number is this?
I think it's been 3 weeks since I've done one from my actual apartment.
Wow.
So yeah, however many I've done in the last 3 weeks, maybe like seven. Well,
that mic's getting some work, so that's good. I'm glad to see that you are committed to your craft.
Yeah, it has only been stopped. Going through TSA once, so.
What'd they think it was?
I don't know, but the base of it is like, I mean, I think we have the same mic, or we did have the same mic, but the base of it is like iron, like thick iron.
Yeah.
So it comes up as like, hey, this guy might be trying to smuggle something. So they had to check it.
Surprise, I'm just trying to talk about a crappy baseball team.
Yep.
Yep. Here we are, though. We are here to talk about Red Sox baseball today. And so on this episode of the show, we're really going to take the pulse of where the team is right now. Obviously, the team is struggling. We're not going to bother all of you with the minutiae of how these games have gone individually. I mean, that is really reserved for the other podcast Keaton does, which he does with Bailey. The pre-cap podcast, so definitely check that out for game-to-game stuff. But we're going to take a higher level look at everything that's going on with this team. I wrote about what's going on with this team today at overthemonster.com. I wrote about Bloom's offseason in 2021, heading into 2022, and kind of how that has impacted the team this year, and how, you know, that's looking for the future. So we're going to talk about that, as well as the things going on with the current club. But let's start with a little bit of good news here. For about half of Red Sox Nation, probably about half, you guys got to see a win yesterday, or as we're recording this, it'll be yesterday. The first game against the Braves, that game was also aired on TBS. Don Ursillo was doing the broadcast for that game. And he got to call a Rafael Devers grand slam. So that was pretty nice. Keaton, I just sent you the video. Rate the call of that grand slam.
I mean, 10 out of 10, just for hearing the voice again.
Yeah.
That was, I was annoyed because I didn't know that Ursillo was calling, but here in my hotel, I tried to tune into the game, and for whatever reason, TBS wouldn't work. It was just all black. So I gave up. So I didn't get a chance to watch the game. And then you just told me now that Ursillo was the one doing the call. And I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe I missed that.
Yeah, it's always great to hear his voice. And definitely to have that come with a Red Sox win where the offense shows up, Devers gets going. That was a pretty good win there. So a little bit of good news in a sea of bad news for this team this year. The Red Sox are currently... we're recording in the middle of the second Atlanta Braves game, but they're currently 11-19, which is last place in the American League East. And unfortunately for this team, the injuries are piling up a little bit here. It's really specifically to the pitching staff that we're seeing these injuries. Bloom gave a press conference a few days back saying that there were some setbacks for both James Paxton and Chris Sale, who I guess the Chris Sale thing may not be injury related, but you know, the James Paxton thing seems like it is. So those guys are going to be delayed a little bit longer. And meanwhile, Michael Wacha was placed on the IL with an intercostal irritation. And Rich Hill is on the COVID-19 IL. So this means the rotation is pretty thin at this point. It's Nathan Eovaldi, Nick Pivetta, who really hasn't found his stride this year. He's been better over his last three starts. So that's encouraging. But that means that Tanner Houck and Garrett Whitlock, two guys who probably are, well, definitely are needed in the bullpen, are now in the starting rotation. So, I mean, how do you feel about this pitching situation with all these injuries? And is there anything the Red Sox can do to kind of weather this storm?
No. I think it's just kind of patching things together the way that they have been. I know they're going to be in the need of somebody this weekend. My preference would be to call somebody up from AAA rather than attempt a bullpen game, because this bullpen is just not built for it, especially with Whitlock and Houck not there to kind of get bulk innings. I'm not really sure how you would piece together a bullpen day other than literally going inning by inning with these guys, and you gotta give them time to rest. Even with a day off, I really don't think piecing together a bullpen day with these guys is something that's going to work. So I think you got to look at Siebold or Winkowski going in one of those directions this weekend. And I think that's it. That's kind of it. You're just kind of piecing it together that way until Rich Hill comes back, hopefully. It's kind of been hit or miss, right? He might be able to come back quickly, depending on how his symptoms are, or it may be like a 10-day thing here. So we'll just have to see. Other than that, it's just piecing it together with what you got. And there's not really great options. Carlos Martinez, they did sign immediately after the game on Sunday now, I think. And then started Monday in Worcester. Didn't get through an inning. But
that didn't go well.
It didn't. But they feel confident that they can make some changes and get something out of him. I was surprised to see him start. I really thought they were going to use him as a reliever. Career 3.37 ERA as a reliever last year. All of 2021, he was used as a starter. His ERA was over 6. Didn't go great. So I thought maybe with a defined role in the bullpen, that might be better suited for him. But it seems like they're going to attempt to use him as a starter, or maybe both. And they may just have three swing guys that they try and, you know, patch this together. Or maybe nothing happens with Martinez at all, and we never see him. So there's also that potential too there. But it seems like that's where they're going. It's either going to be a bullpen day, or they call someone up, or potentially in the long term we see Carlos Martinez. But I think those are the options. That's what we've seen with their plans, and none of them really great. But I don't think there's anything else they can do.
Yeah, it wouldn't totally surprise me if they didn't even bother to go with one of Connor Siebold or Josh Winkowski, and I agree with you that those two guys are the most likely options considering they're both on the 40-man, and you know, you're probably not dipping down to AA to some of the better options there, like Brian Bayo or even Jay Groom, who's definitely not the second-best option there. Brandon Walter would be the second-best, but you know, he's not on the 40-man at this point. I don't think that they're going to dip down there. I think they might try and do something like string together 5 innings from Tyler Danish and Cutter Crawford or something like that, which, you know, may turn out horrendously. But, you know, at this point, I'm not sure they have much better options. I'm not really sure that Siebold or Winkowski would be better than that tandem at this point. So They're dangerously low on depth. And, you know, this has been sort of the theme of this year, is that when the Red Sox struggle at certain positions, they just really don't have very many buttons to press to rectify those issues. I mean, the depth in the minor league system is better, but the problem is that it's not great at the upper levels of the system. There's not a lot of guys who are right here on the cusp. So as we're seeing injuries rack up in the starting rotation, you know, that's being exposed. And what that's doing is it's eating away at the quality options, the few quality options that the team does have in the bullpen. And, you know, the guys in the bullpen have been bad. Other than Matt Strom, it's not been good out there. Even a guy like Hansel Robles, who has good numbers on the surface, the 2.7 ERA, when you dig a little deeper into his numbers, I mean, it looks like some serious regression is probably headed his way. You know, Barnes is unplayable at this point. Jake Diekman's very inconsistent. There's just not a lot going on in that bullpen right now. So it feels like overall, this is probably a pretty poorly constructed team for this year. And I'm a little surprised that this is what happened following last year. And I guess that's kind of the tenor of the article I wrote today, was just like, how on earth did Bloom decide, hey, we're 2 wins away from the World Series. We've reset our luxury tax threshold. And we're going to piece it together with Waka, Hill, hope that sales okay. And, you know, sign James Paxton, throw spaghetti at a wall, see what sticks. I mean, it's just bizarre how little was actually addressed this offseason when you really dig into it. And one of the things I wrote about was, you know, looking at the additions to the rotation with Waka and Hill. I mean, these are two guys that just haven't thrown a lot of innings over the last few years. And in Waka's case, hasn't even really been good when he has thrown innings over the last couple of years. So at least with Hill, you can defend that whatever you get out of him will probably be okay. But with Waka, you know, I think we've been tremendously lucky with what we've seen from Michael Waka this year. He's way overperformed what we've expected. You know, he's got a fantastic ERA, but when you dig under his numbers a little bit, it looks like big regression is going to hit him as well.
Yeah. Well, so here's the interesting piece, because I agree with you that more should have been done. And I think we had a listener question that I think really kind of nailed it on the head. When I was kind of thinking about this and reading your article, if we want to kind of jump to that, this was Patio D's question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. Do you think the success of 2021 made the front office believe in itself a bit too much? Like they could easily find another pitcher like Whitlock, build up the bullpen with roster churn like the Rays. What's happening in 2022 a victim of 2021 success? I really think it is the case, because I mean, you outline how things really weren't addressed and how that kind of made this offseason disappointing. But it's also kind of the piece that you outline is how it didn't give room for error, or like any kind of wiggle room for like catching a slow start.
Yeah.
Because if the offense is hitting, this team might be in first place in this division, which is kind of what's crazy to think about. So I compared, I was just looking at the runs per game of the team last year in 2021 to the runs per game, both offensively and allowed, to this year. The pitching game, the Red Sox are allowing 4.1 runs per game this year, which is down a half a run last year. So, like you pointed out in your article, they hit on Waka and Hill, but you can't really tell because of how bad the team's been performing. Even with them overachieving and the pitching as a whole being really good. The bullpen for the first month of the season was unbelievable. It was due for regression. The regression has happened. Even if everything was clicking on all cylinders, the bullpen would still be frustrating and we'd be annoyed by it because it was basically just running back the same bullpen, but the same bullpen as 2021, just with different names. But that was a bullpen that got them 2 wins away from the World Series, so it would have been effective enough. However, the runs per game scored is down a run and a half. So they scored 5.1 last year. They're scoring 3.5 this year. If they were scoring 5.1 this year, like they were last year, I mean, by averages, they would be undefeated. They'd be scoring one run more per game than they'd be allowing, and they would be undefeated. Obviously, we know that wouldn't be the case, but they would probably be neck and neck with the Yankees at the top of this division if the offense was actually hitting. But that actually kind of backs up what you wrote in your article, that by failing to address the depth, you didn't get an outfielder, an offensive outfielder, you didn't go after a guy like Suzuki or any of the other guys that were out there, like bringing back Schwarber or going to get Castellanos or any of those guys. You didn't add any kind of depth to the bench, infield or outfield. You just kind of ran back Arroyo. The bottom three of the lineup last year was a black hole. You got saved by Dahlbuck's hot streak. You really couldn't rely on that again. You didn't reinforce that. And that's kind of led to the offensive failures this year. You shouldn't have predicted that success was going to continue. And just the doing nothing to address that. Like, you didn't even really need to. One of the great things about your article that I like that you outlined was you took the money that they did spend and allocated it and said, here's how it could have better been spent to build up the depth in all of these different directions and really kind of addressed all of the points that you needed to hit to reinforce this roster. And it came out to less than what they actually did spend, but would have been all major upgrades for the entire roster, top to bottom. And the fact that the Red Sox weren't even mentioned with those guys throughout the offseason was kind of puzzling. I mean, Suzuki was the only one, and they were only really mentioned with him during the lockout when they weren't supposed to be. And like, it wasn't before the lockout, it wasn't after the lockout. When they could actually talk to him and potentially sign him, they were never really mentioned there. It was only really heated up during the lockout when they weren't supposed to talk to him. Which is kind of like, okay, were they actually ever in on him then? Because that kind of makes it a little bit weird, right? So, everybody else, it was kind of just a big question mark. But it's just kind of, it feels like they were resting on their laurels of what got them 2 wins away from the World Series. And rather than seeing an opportunity to build on that and push them over the edge to reinforce that roster that was that close, they were like, no, we can do it again. Let's run it back. And without actually seeing the glaring holes in that roster that were actually what kept them 2 wins short from the World Series. They were satisfied with trying to run that back again where there were glaring holes.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that there were even a couple other things that they could have looked at that I didn't even mention in my article. That they should have maybe planned for. One of those things that, you know, I wanted to fit in there, but I wasn't able to, was, you know, Kike Hernandez. His performance this year has been really bad. And he was one of the better players on this team last year in 2021. He was absolutely fantastic. The guy put up a 4.1 WAR season, had the second best offensive full season of his career, to his 2018 season with the Dodgers, was just a great all-around player. But one of the things we noticed when we were doing this podcast last year, Keaton, was how drastically different Kike hit when he was playing second base rather than when he was playing center field. So just to remind everybody, last year when he was playing second base, he slashed .339, .433, .619 with a 178 WRC plus. He was basically a world-class player while he was at second base. In center field last year, he slashed .213, .293, .378 with a 79 WRC plus. So clearly, there was something to that. I don't know how much of that is sample size noise, but certainly Kike seemed to be a lot more comfortable at the plate while he was at second base. It kind of figured that, like, you know, if you wanted to cheap out at one position, maybe you do still make that Jackie Bradley Jr. trade that they made, but then let Jackie play center, let Kike play second base, and then go out and get that right fielder that we all wanted. You know, that would have made a little bit more sense based on what happened as well. And then the other clear one was the Dahlbeck thing. So, you know, Dahlbeck coming into last year had just a really weird season. The 48-game stretch that ran from August 1st to October 3rd, he had a 174 WRC plus and slugged 683. The other 85 games that year, he slugged 399 with a 72 WRC plus. The larger sample size showed that Dahlbeck was this sort of unproductive guy, and they paired him with Travis Shaw rather than you know, any sort of meaningful player there who could be a stopgap to Tristan Casas. I mean, I mentioned in the article the two-year deal that the Yankees gave to Rizzo. You know, another name that was out there was Brandon Belt at 1 year, $18.4 million. He accepted the qualifying offer from the Giants. You know, maybe you're not able to lure either of those guys, but at least it seems like you should have tried. I think you're more likely to lure a guy like Rizzo, but I would have been fine with that because, you know what? You play Rizzo at first base for the majority of this year. Next year, when JD leaves, just slot Rizzo in at DH and problem solved. You know, it's just, it was very weird the amount of things that they overlooked, because now that Kike is not hitting, we have Verdugo underperforming as well, but his Statcast numbers say, hey, this is going to change on a dime. But there's no fix for Christian Vasquez, no fix for Jackie Bradley Jr., you know, no fix for Franchy Cordero and Dahlbeck, which is just the most miserable platoon I can possibly think of. I mean, the only guys that are reliably hitting are the stars, Devers, Martinez, and Bogarts. And those are the three guys whose futures are probably most uncertain on this entire roster.
Yeah.
That's insane. That's just patently insane.
Yep. You're right. Absolutely right. But that's, I mean, kind of outlining how bad the offense has been. I mean, forget, I mean, the bottom three aside, because I wasn't expecting anything from this, from the bottom three at all. And you know, in our season preview series, I talked about how I wasn't really kind of expecting to get much from that. But the top six, I was expecting to be probably, I mean, the best top six in the American League. I think we compared it to Toronto's, and we felt that top six was probably the Red Sox had the edge. But if you compared all nine, Toronto's lineup was lengthier. And so we felt like yeah. The core six of the Red Sox was going to be enough. They were going to score enough runs, just like they did last year. And unfortunately, we're not seeing it. But that's what gives me – I'm still optimistic about them turning it around this season and going on a run, because Trevor Story's starting to heat up now, which is good to see. Had his first home run tonight. He's had a few multi-hit games this week, which is good to see. Verdugo, as you pointed out, his all of his tertiary stats and stat casts, his predictive stats say he's doing the right things. He's just been really unlucky. So there's hope there. And then Devers, Martinez, Bogarts doing really well. So I feel like they still have a run in them. And it's weird because I'm not the optimistic one on this podcast, but I still feel good about it because
you are now, Keaton.
I know, which is really weird. I don't know how this happened here, but it doesn't feel right. It feels foreign. But I just, this offense just isn't this bad. And the pitching, I believe in Michael Wacha, and I think they really got something there. I don't know what they're going to get at Rich Hill, because, I mean, you pointed out in your article, guy has really had, like, what was it, since 2007, he's only pitched 150 innings once, and it happened to be last year, which is, I mean, I guess potentially a good sign, but also kind of scary with, he's got all those miles packaged on his arm immediately. So I don't know necessarily what you're going to get there. Maybe he ends up back in the bullpen and Whitlock ends up being that guy in the rotation full time, where I think he should belong, but hopefully you don't have to rely on him in the bullpen or however that ends up shaking up. The pitching has been really good. Even with how bad the bullpen has been, they're not giving up a lot of runs. So it's really like, that's what makes this so frustrating, and seeing the offense underperform like this. Like, I just can't believe we're only going to have three guys who know how to hit a ball for the entire season. I just can't believe that's actually going to happen. So I still feel optimistic that they can turn this around, go on a run. It's going to be really hard to move up anywhere in the standings, and I guess this is where having massively expanded playoffs might help them, if they were to actually like get to the postseason and make a run. But I think they can turn this around and make the season look a lot better, make us forget about how bad this start was. But they're still going to need to make moves. And they haven't really, I mean, besides the Schwarber move, which was unique in itself because he was acquired while he was injured, we haven't really seen Bloom make an in-season move to, besides the Schwarber move, that was really kind of like a significant piece, right? And we had to wait on Schwarber to see how that played out before we actually saw him. So there was a bit of risk involved with that move. So I'd be curious to see, you know, basically how the next 2 months play out.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the only other trade you can kind of attribute to him with meaning is the move for Brandon Workman and Heath Hembree for Seabold and Pivetta. But even that move, I mean, the club was out of it at that point. So that was selling and not acquiring talent. Yeah. But I think you hit on a really interesting point right now, is the start for this team. And it's going to be incredibly difficult for this team to overcome such a bad start. So right now, the Red Sox currently are projected by FanGraphs to finish essentially 500, 81 and 81. Is what they're projected at this point. Their playoff odds are 21.5% as we do this podcast right now. Those are not very good. Their percentage chance to win the division is 1.1% at this point. Yeah, I mean, it's tough. You're already 11 games back of the Yankees, and it's May. And the thing that, you know, is often a talking point with baseball, and I think a lot of people get this wrong, is like, you know, oh, it's early, but it matters. You know, teams that start poorly traditionally don't actually make up that ground. And there was a really interesting article on FanGraphs by Jay Jaffe that came out on May 10th, and he looked at Red Sox teams with worse records through 29 games. This was one game ago. And this team, the 2022 team, was the fourth worst team. I suppose it was tied for third worst with the 1996 club, just behind 1966, 2020. And then it was 96 and 2022 team tied at a 345 winning percentage. So here's what those teams did for the year. The 1966 team finished 72 and 90, obviously out of the playoffs. The 2020 team, I don't have to remind anyone here how bad that was, with, you know, the manager almost falling asleep in the dugout all the time. And it was just, that was like one of the worst teams I've ever watched. 24 and 36 in the shortened year. The 96 team, though, is the one that gives a little bit of hope. It's actually the two teams that are sandwiched around the 2022 team are the 1996 and the 1972 team. Those teams found their level a little bit, and they both finished with 85 wins. in those respective seasons. So there is some precedent, but all of the other teams on this list, if we extend it out to the 61, 64, 84, 2012, and 2019, I mean, almost all of those teams didn't really do well, with the exception of like the 84 and the 2019 team, which were fine, but still not good. You know, so the odds are that this team is probably going to be a bad team who misses the playoffs.
Maybe. I mean, it wasn't the Red Sox, but wasn't the 2019 Nationals, they were like 20 and 29, won the World Series?
It's true. Yeah. It's not impossible. It just feels really impossible. The 2019 Nationals also had the best player on the planet. And Max Scherzer.
Michael Wacha. I mean...
Of course. Everybody compares Michael Wacha to Max Scherzer. And sure, Devers maybe can do his best Juan Soto impression.
exactly.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah.
They're pretty differently constructed teams, but, you know, it's difficult. This is going to be really difficult.
Yeah, it is.
And I don't know. Can you paint a blueprint for me for how they get out of this? Like, how does it look for this team to play well over 500 baseball for the rest of the year? Because that's what they have to do to get to even close to 500, is they have to play well over 500 baseball moving forward. How do they do that with this current setup and the lack of depth that we already discussed?
Well, Verdugo goes back to his, you know, the first 3 weeks of the year, right? Trevor Story hits the 40 home runs we all thought he'd hit in Fenway, playing there. The core three just keep doing their thing. You get, you know, a couple weeks at a time, you get a hot streak out of Dahlbeck, JBJ, Arroyo. You know, you don't ask a lot. Maybe they let them, maybe they can overlap so you can get like some runs scored here. I mean, it all falls on the offense, because the, you know, something that I've made sure to mention on a lot of podcasts now is that the Red Sox defense is stellar. And it gets completely lost in how poorly this team has been playing. But they're one of the best defensive teams in the league right now, which is wild considering where they were a year ago. And that is not something that is hindering their success at all. That side of the ball has been fantastic. So keep that up. Offense just hits. Pitching keeps doing what it's doing. To me, it all just kind of falls on the offense. I'd like to see a move to get somebody at the back who can hit, like, I don't know, once every 7 days would be nice. I'd like
You're
to
asking
see,
a lot, Keaton.
I know. I'd like to see Duran get everyday playing time, or at least a chance. I don't know if anything would come of it, but it's like, can't be worse than what they got down the bottom of the order now. So, but yeah, really, I just think it's Verdugo and Story, turn it around. You get something out of somebody at the bottom of the order a few days a week. And then I think you're back to scoring 5 runs a game. And then you start going on a run where you're winning, you know, 4 or 5 games a week.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that this team is as bad as it's shown so far, not including tonight's game stats as we record this. Red Sox are 26th in baseball in runs scored. In terms of WRC+, they are also 26th at 82. And in terms of wins above replacement as an offense, according to Fangraphs, they are 28th. So that, I mean, that puts them in truly miserable company and around teams that have, you know, minuscule payrolls in comparison to the Red Sox. So I don't think that they can grossly underperform to this degree for the rest of the year. So I agree with you that the offense is probably going to find its level at some point. What I am worried about, though, is that I do believe that the bullpen is probably as bad as we think it is. I it's ranked right now 21st in baseball in terms of ERA. And if we look at, you know, that in terms of WAR, which, you know, quantifies a little bit more about some of those underlying metrics, especially, you know, fielding independent pitching and some of that stuff, it's a little bit worse than that. So I am concerned about that. The other thing I'm concerned about is the robbing Peter to pay Paul thing with, you know, moving Whitlock and Houck to the rotation for these oft-injured guys. The strength of this team to this point has been the 140 innings pitch that we've gotten from the rotation. That's 10th best ERA in baseball at 3.41. The underlying metrics say that this team has a lot worse starters on it than what we're getting numbers-wise. And I think that as attrition continues, we're probably not going to see that number improve. And that's what I'm so worried about, is the pitching and the attrition on that side. I think you're right. The offense will eventually find its level.
Maybe. But, you know, Sale and Paxton are supposed to come back at some point. Well, I mean, I don't think you're going to get much out of Paxton this year, but with that, we're going to get something to Sale. Here's something. Why is Mark Melancon in Arizona? Go get him.
Well, they had an opportunity to. He signed for, what, 2 years and $14 million last year, and you weren't in on him. You know, it's just like, why now are we going to, as a big market team, give up prospect capital to the Diamondbacks to go get a guy we could have just had for money?
Because the off season was stupid. You outlined it. We made a mistake.
Yeah.
So now we got to go fix it.
We made so many mistakes. It's just, it's annoying. And that's the thing that scares me too, is Bloom going to lose faith in this particular unit and start selling? That's where things get really frightening, because we've outlined some of the contract situations that are going on with this team right now. And, you know, they're not great. Kike has the opportunity to be out of here after next year. So, you know, that's a guy that they could potentially move on from if they're out of it. Xander Bogaerts is a guy who, I mean, I would hate that more than anything, that they could potentially trade. And we got some listener questions about that we'll explore. Devers only has a year left. I won't even utter the words that they could trade him. But, like, you know, Eovaldi is going to carry tremendous value. And if they don't plan on extending Eovaldi and they're still way out of it, like, these are all names that, would you really put it past Bloom to trade these names from the team, considering they have a half a year left of control by the midseason?
If they're still in last place, no. If they're still in last place, I would expect it. I don't think they would let guys like Eovaldi and others walk if they're in last place and there's no intention to keep them here beyond this year. Then yeah, I would expect them to. Bogaerts one would suck so hard. And I really feel like it's, I mean, I feel like if they don't get Bogaerts done, then they're not going to get Devers done either. And
yeah,
that's just a gut feeling. I feel like obviously there's more time to get it done. And, if Martinez is gone and if Bogaerts is gone, obviously they've got more capital to play with, which is just a stupid thing to think about with the Red Sox. Like, those words should not be something that we're saying with the Red Sox, but it just feels like he will have seen, like, every face of the franchise since he's been with the team, just either, like, traded or just let walked. So why would he be like, yeah, no, they definitely believe in me. They didn't believe in anybody else. What would be different?
Yep. I think you're right. And I think that's the scariest thing is if they don't turn this around and get closer to contention by the time that that trade deadline comes around, we might see some truly frightening things start happening with this roster. And they may be justified. And some people will drink the Kool-Aid. But know that if that occurs, that it was Bloom's fault for failing monumentally with this offseason. That's it.
We don't have to talk about that yet, though. We're still months away.
Yep. It's coming. It's coming. It's May. I don't know. All right.
It's still early, Jake, as they say.
Yeah, it is. That is something that they say. That is definitely a thing they say.
Don't forget, maybe we started late.
Yes, that's true. Should we get to a few of these listener questions? Because I think that these questions really kind of hit at a lot of the stuff we're talking about.
Yeah.
First one comes from Ivan L. Apex, and he says, how about now that he is back, we go get Luis Castillo? And if Bloom doesn't want to pay up top prospects, he can try to get Moustakas' bad contract with him. He only has 1 year and $18 million left after this year. He hasn't been horrible, 697 OPS, and he can at least play first, third, DH. Luis Castillo, is that a piece that you could see Bloom trading some prospect capital to get with the addition of Michael Moustakas, especially considering, I mean, the Cincinnati Reds dumpster fire makes the Red Sox look like a World Series challenger at this point.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense to me. It would also start to give some shape back to the bullpen and some more defined roles to guys like Houck and Whitlock. So I would be all for it. Moustakas one is interesting. I mean, that's not a bad... I mean, you're talking about like one of those like middle-of-the-road guys to play first to hold over to Casas. That's not a bad one.
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on what the cost is. You know, obviously the cost for Luis Castillo is going to be very high. I don't know how much that gets reduced by taking on Moustakas' contract, and if it's a meaningful reduction, if you can do it without touching the top three, if you could send like a package of, you know, I don't know, Duran and Downs and Bayo, to get that done rather than touching the top three guys in York and Casas and Mayer, then I think you definitely have to consider it because Luis Castillo is such a good young pitcher. But I'm just not sure how realistic that is. You know, I would definitely explore it, though, and I think that it's something that the due diligence should be done on, especially if you find yourself in a position where, you know, you are thinking that you might shop Kike. You are thinking that you might shop JD Martinez. You are going to shop some of these other guys. I mean, Moustakas is a fine bat to carry you to the end of a meaningless season.
Yep.
We already answered Patty O'Dea's great question, so we'll move on to the next one from Winston. He says, is it officially time to embrace the beginning of the end for Xander? This team's bad. He's going to be a free agent, and now multiple national outlets/reporters are discussing him potentially being moved at the deadline. Keaton, I hate this question. Nothing against Winston. I'm just the idea of Xander not being here is so painful to think about. I don't do this. I don't trade him. Even if the Red Sox are out of it, if it's me, Keaton, I do not trade Xander Bogaerts. I don't think what you get back will be worth the harm that it potentially causes the case of potentially re-signing him. I always think that once a guy leaves, it makes it far easier for him to pack his bags and go for good.
Yeah, and the offers are not going to be great because he has the opt-out. So without any kind of guarantee and him, like, a sign-and-trade or something like that, like a guarantee that he'll sign a long-term contract after the deal, which he's not going to do because he's already stated he's going to opt out, you're not getting anything meaningful at all in return whatsoever. So, yeah, it's... I don't think it's the end, and just because he's opting out doesn't mean that the Red Sox... I feel like we're saying the same stuff about, like, Mookie and other guys, but just because they opt out doesn't mean they can't come back. But with Bogarts, I feel like we really mean it because of what he means to this team. And I think that they mean it when they want him there. But I just feel like if they don't make, like, an actual effort to re-sign him this offseason when he does opt out, I already barely believe anything that this front office says. I will no longer believe a single word.
Yeah, I think you nailed it there. I would also say that I would rather have Xander on a last place team and a 50% chance to sign him long term than have no Xander on a last place team with like a 10% chance to re-sign him and some, you know, bottom 100, you know, 50 to 100 range national prospect in the system. Give me the better chance at signing Bogarts over another prospect any day. Because it's not going to be like a top 10 guy. I mean, you're not going out and getting Julio Rodriguez for half a season of Xander.
Yeah, no.
Just doesn't work like that. Hamilton Porter has the next question. He says, don't give a team or management perspective. You personally, me and you, Keaton, who would you prioritize long term, Xander or Rafi?
Devers.
Why?
Younger, higher potential. I mean, I know, like, the leadership that Bogarts brings, and that's a big piece of what you're going to say. But
like, you already know my answer.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And yeah. And that's, but I mean, Devers, you were talking about Devers being like a perennial MVP guy last year, and
yeah,
he's 24. That's, yeah. So Devers for me. This is going to cost you more, but that's why I prioritize Devers. Doesn't matter. I don't care if he's not playing third or first. If he's even, like, I would invest long term in him as my DH too. It's just the talent is a special bat, and I would prioritize that.
Yeah, I mean, I think looking forward, you're right. If I'm looking at these guys from a pure baseball perspective, I think that Rafi is the guy you have to focus on. If you had to choose one of these players to build around. But as we've talked about before, I would prioritize Xander in these negotiations because I think if you get Xander, you also have a better opportunity to get Rafi long term. And I think, you know, Xander, I feel extremely safe about. If you're asking me which one of these contracts I think might be more risky than the other, I absolutely think that Rafi has a more violent swing, a higher maintenance body. He definitely has a higher offensive ceiling, but I think he also has a higher or a much lower floor than Xander, who, you know, takes care of his body, doesn't miss games, is very consistent. Rafi hasn't started missing games either, but he's still very young, as you pointed out. So I feel really good about Xander from an aging perspective, and I'm totally comfortable giving him a long-term deal. I would prioritize him and what he means to the team, and I know I'm definitely in the minority on that. Next one comes from Ivan L. Apex again. He says, from 1 to 10, how much would it suck if Xander leaves in free agency and stays in the division playing second base for the Jays? It would be like that deer in the bridge that you guys tweet sometimes when things are bad. I would be like, I think he's referencing the everything's fine.
No, the deer on the foggy bridge. You don't know what?
Oh, no, I don't know this one.
It's like a statue, but it's pretty hilarious. Hold on, I was pulling up because I had a hunch that you may not know what it was referencing.
Yeah, I'm the internet illiterate guy here. Anyhow, I'll start answering this while you're sending me relevant gifts, but it would be off the scale for me. I mean, it would be well past a 10. It would suck. I cannot imagine. There are certain players you can't imagine in a different uniform, and I can't imagine Xander in a different uniform. I hate it. I hate even talking about it.
Yeah, I would feel like the Ben Affleck cigarette meme.
I know that one.
Yeah. I just sent it to you. So we can get your live you. On pod reaction to the deer on the bridge meme.
Okay. I'm pulling it up now so I can give the people a true reaction. Oh yeah, I have seen this. Yes, that's good. I do like that. That's quite good.
Yep.
Yep. I've seen Matt post that quite a bit, so.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's our show today. We hope that you enjoyed the look here. Definitely go check out the article that we've been referencing quite a bit. Keaton, do you want to plug anything right now? Other podcasts or articles you're working on here at OTM or elsewhere?
No, just keep your ears tuned to the Over the Monster podcast network, because we're turning them out. Good stuff for you.
Absolutely. We're not going to be daunted by this this rough start. We're going to be with you in your ears all along the way, regardless of how badly this thing gets screwed up. We will be here telling you why and how it happened. So stay tuned in with us, and hopefully things get better. Have a great week.